Susie and Terry dream of living in France. The dream comes true, but not in the way they had imagined. Yes, the countryside is spacious and peaceful. On summer nights, the stars skim the rooftops, the owls hoot, and the nightingales sing. Sunflowers smile from the fields. The wine is cheap, and the baguettes are crusty. Very crusty indeed. The French neighbours are generous and gentle, but then come the drug addicts, builders who cannot build, demanding compatriots, undercover cops, and unwelcome guests. With their house literally crumbling around her, the number of odd characters she managed to attract are only matched by the assortment of creatures appearing from in and out of the woodwork. With Brexit looming, Susie is looking back at over 30 years of living in France. It's the subject of her latest book, In Foreign Fields, How Not to Move to France. Delighted to be joining me live on the line, I presume from La Belle France, is Susie Kelly. Susie, bonjour.
Bonjour, Giles.
So, first of all, tell us where exactly you are in France as we speak to you this morning.
Well, we live about 30 miles due south of Poitiers and 80 miles east of La Rochelle. So we're in southwest France in the department called the Vienne, which is now part of the what they call the Nouvelle Aquitaine region.
Very nice indeed. So why did you originally decide to leave good old Merry England some 30 years ago and decamp to that rather special area of the world?
Well, we'd always wanted to move to France. It had been the dream that one day we would do it. And when the recession arrived in the early 90s, it hastened our decision because we were quite badly affected by the recession. That's an understatement. And the option was we had a lot of animals and we were going to become homeless. So we managed to borrow a very small amount of money and buy a virtual ruin so that we could move out to live in this part of the world. Property was very cheap and we had enough land to bring our horses and dogs with us. So we really can thank the recession for hastening our move. Otherwise, we would quite possibly still be living in Merry England.
I mean, a lot of us who are of a certain age will remember the mid to late 80s and the early 90s and Peter Mayle's book A Year in Provence. And it sort of led to, if almost, a sort of mass exodus of Brits to France at that time. Did you find many people were suddenly abandoning England and deciding to set up in France? In your particular, I know you're not in Provence, but were you the only Brits in the village, as it were?
I had expected to be, but in fact, my neighbour, one house but one away, was British. And even in our very small village, just outside the hamlet, there were already a lot of British people. Some of them had been there quite a long time, but there were a lot of people at the time, like us, who had moved out here for financial reasons as much as anything else, and were living in pretty dire circumstances.
So tell me a little bit about then your first impressions then when you got to your house stroke romantic ruin, shall we call it? Because, you know, the opening paragraph about, you know, sunflowers smiling, good wine, baguettes crusty and charming. I mean, it seems like something out of the, you know, the Aquitaine tourist guide.
Well, in some ways it was. It's spacious, it's quiet, it's beautiful. And then in other ways, it wasn't. If you hadn't been sort of virtually destitute, it would have been fantastic. But even, you know, living in quite rough circumstances and with very little money, it was still bliss. The people they're not effusive, the French people around here. They're very quiet, very gentle, and very helpful, welcoming. The weather was pretty good until the winter arrived. I was as happy as I could be. It was really just paradise, but not the same sort of paradise as Peter Mayle was having in Provence. It was a different kind of paradise. I think it was beautiful to be here, away from the stresses that we'd left behind in England. We could just relax and enjoy ourselves. The food and the wine were cheap. Yeah, and we were happy to be here.
You just said in that last sentence, and something because, you know, because the way you said, we were happy until winter arrived. So there you are, enjoying your, you know, it's late autumn, you're enjoying yet another glass of a cheeky little vino, and or a vin, you know, a vin rouge, and, you know, in a cracking open another crusty baguette, and then the first chills of autumn come. What happened in the winter then?
Well, when we bought the house, we had actually completed the sale and paid the estate agent had his commission, so he had, you know, he was in the clear. We said to him, what kind of heating do you recommend? And he said, oh, you won't need heating. He said, you're south of the Loire. He said, it won't get very cold here. He said, you know, probably need to put on a jumper in the evening, but no, you won't need heating. And we were thrilled because we couldn't have afforded heating anyway. And we didn't have many doors in the property, and we had a very large barn door, and we thought, well, we'll take that down because it'll let some light in, and we'll pin up some plastic over the hole in case it gets a bit breezy, which is what we did.
Right.
Well, that winter, the temperature went down to minus 18.
Right, sorry, don't mean to laugh, yeah, go on.
And the jumper in the evening didn't do the trick at all. I mean, it was absolutely Arctic. Even the things inside the refrigerator froze.
Good grief.
The washing up liquid froze. The plants all died. It wasn't quite what we expected. We had taken him at his word, which is a bit stupid, really. And we thought, oh, well, you know, it'll be brisk during the winter. We just put a few more clothes on and keep active. And there we were with a house with a gigantic hole in it. And everything freezing around us.
Yeah, those of us, because we are Spain's largest English language radio station, so those of us who live full-time in Spain will have this one as well, because you move to Spain, you know, and it's summer and it's warm, and you think, oh, I'm never going to need anything like heating, and then you realise that, you know, the Spanish houses are not really designed for cold weather, and that sounds like a case in point.
Yes.
So how did you survive it, apart from putting sort of like almost got of the Antarctic layers on yourselves?
Oh, that was the way that I survived. There wasn't an alternative. We didn't have a heating source that year. There was I think, you know, when these things happen, you find a way to survive. You just keep putting more clothes on and banging your arms against your sides and stamping your feet and waiting for it to get dark so that you can get into bed again. You survive because you don't have an alternative to survive. You know, you either survive or you're going to die.
hardly the French dream. Now, you know, as I said, we all move away, you know, we all left England for a more, perhaps a more exciting and more colourful life, and we look forward to seeing the characters that make up the bohemian types, the eccentrics, the people who are a little bit different from a 9-to-5 on the Northern Line. You began to meet it after that, you survived that first winter in Game of Thrones style. You began to find some interesting characters, but not perhaps in the way that you wanted them to be interesting.
Well, yes, we did meet quite a lot of strange people, a lot of them in the same circumstances as ourselves. You know, they'd moved out here with no money, and a lot of them didn't speak any French either, and, you know, some of them didn't plan to learn any French. So, thanks to one of my neighbours who told everybody that I could speak French, even though it was fairly basic, all sorts of people used to turn up at the door waving letters. I was nearly going to say French letters, waving letters at me.
Well, that was one way of keeping warm during the winter.
Yes, I'll rephrase that, letters in French, and saying, you know, you need to translate this for me. Or that people would come around and say, I need you to phone somebody for me because I need to arrange this, that or the other. And then, of course, my next-door neighbour, who I was very fond of in a sort of irritable way, he ended up being arrested for drug smuggling.
Okay.
He went to prison, yes. There was always something happening. There were, I mean, these people were... It was like being in a play, really, where somebody would enter left and say something, you know, introduce some weird scene, which it made life interesting.
And how did the house renovation go? Because, you know, not only did interesting people come out of the woodwork, but interesting things came out of the woodwork, literally.
Yes, we've got little rodenty things that live in the walls and were up in the ceiling, and occasional snakes. Luckily, I'm not afraid of snakes. I've had them in the house. Lots of mice. We get lots of mice. We still get mice sometimes, and we try to capture them in a waste bin when they're running around the kitchen at night, and we capture them in a waste bin, and then the next day we drive them about 5 miles away and leave them in the fields because we don't really like killing things.
Right.
And then the spiders. We have big spiders, very big spiders. But in the end, you just have to accept that they're in your house, and if they do crawl over you when you're asleep, that's what they're going to do. I've given up worrying about it now.
I suppose, you know, as the old saying goes, we make our own fun up away from whatever. So, you know, chasing small rodents around and putting them in waste paper bins is one way of keeping warm and keeping yourself entertained.
Absolutely, yes.
On a serious note, though, Terry, your partner, sorry, your husband, significant other, fell ill, and that must have been a very worrying time for you.
It was very frightening because he was obviously ill for many months, and he was told it was nothing to worry about. But in fact, he had a very severe injury in his head. He had a subdural hematoma, and he was operated on in England. And they removed a litre of blood from inside his head, which had been pressing against his brain. And then when he came out here to convalesce, it happened a second time. And it's a really serious condition. A lot of people do not recover from it at all. Some people who recover are left incapacitated. But we are sort of hardy stock, and he made a full recovery from that. But it was pretty frightening. On the other hand, the French medical services here are so good. You know, they really are on the ball, very, very modern and kind people there. So he was lucky that that he did recover with all his faculties, nearly all his faculties. He probably lost one or two.
They're probably the good faculties to lose. So where are we? Where are we? Where are you at the moment? And how is the house at the moment? How do you find your life in France? And with le Brexit coming up faster than you can possibly imagine, are you taking stock of yourself? And is that why you decided to put it down in your latest book?
Well, as far as this Brexit debacle goes, who knows? And there's I'm just one of these people who think, if it happens and we're affected, we have to deal with it. But until it happens and until we know whether or not we're going to be affected, we just have to get on with our life. There's no point in driving ourselves mad worrying until we know we have a reason to worry. So we have applied for carte séjour. We've been here for 23 years now and, you know, sort of feel that we are fairly established. We have a right to be here.
Carte de jour, excuse me.
If we had to go back to England, we wouldn't have anywhere to go anyway. So I try to just keep it under wraps and just say, wait and see what happens, because there's nothing else we can do, really.
Excuse my ignorance, but what is carte de jour?
Oh, carte de jour, it's a residence permit.
Right, okay.
It's a bit of paper that says you are you are legally entitled to live in France.
So why did you decide, why did you decide to write this as your latest book, but there's enough material in there for several novels. I mean, how did you get it all organised and manage to put this down pen to paper or keyboard to screen without having sort of a major trauma about what you've been through with this with your particular time?
Well, it was actually published many, many years ago. I think it was in 2004. It was published by Transworld Books under a different title. But they didn't do a digital edition. And I've been asking them for the rights back for quite a long time, got the rights back, and decided to give the book an update, because looking back at some of the events, I could see them in a slightly different light. So it's an edited version of an older book, and it is now available in paperback and in digital. It was reassembling the information, putting in some new things that I remembered, and taking out some things that I thought maybe it would be nicer without.
And it was also going to be available as a download on the TRE virtual bookshop as well. If somebody was thinking of moving to your particular region of France, what advice would you give them after your almost four decades of experience there now?
I think one of the things I would say is, if you're moving to France, if you have sufficient money, buy a property that is already renovated. Because when you buy a ruin, it costs far, far more than you could ever imagine to renovate it, and it takes far, far longer. And so all the dreamy days of sitting in the sun, sipping wine, don't happen, because you're always digging up rocks or filling in gaps. So ideally, buy something that is at least comfortable. You know, you can always redecorate, but don't take on a major renovation job. It will just swallow up your life. And don't buy more land than you can cope with either, because everything is very rampant here. And unless you're a keen gardener and have lots of energy, it can get a little bit overwhelming.
Everything is very rampant in France. I think that should be my thing for the day. The book is called In Foreign Fields, How Not to Move to France. You can get it now on Kindle or via the TRE virtual bookshops. It's by Susie Kelly. Susie, only begs the question, what's next in your sights? Are you going to continue to update the book? Are you going to go off on another departure? What have you got planned for your typical weekend in France?
This typical weekend won't be really typical. I volunteer at an animal charity, and we've just had a very big change around there. All our stock and fittings have been removed, and I shall be there at the weekend with Terry, helping to get it all ready to open again next Tuesday. There are no typical weekends for us. They're always different.
Same for us here in Spain as well. And also, just forgot to mention, if people want to follow you on social media or internet, is there a website? Is there? I'm looking at the Facebook page now, so you've got 30 seconds to promote shamelessly your website and Facebook pages.
Ooh, I don't have a website. Now you've caught me out, because I've got a Facebook page, which is...
Susie Kelly's books page, at a wild guess. I'm looking at it now.
That's it, yes. That's the one.
It's a brilliant thing, and I'm very impressed by the winners of the jigsaw competition. I'll have to look a bit further to find out what that was all about. Susie Kelly, somewhere in a foreign field that is forever England in Aquitaine. It's been a pleasure to speak to you. Have a fantastic weekend.
Thank you very much indeed, Giles. Thank you.